This is The Conversation, and today on our call-in show, we are tackling CBD, the cannabinoid extract from the cannabis plant, is sold in products at farmers markets and at retail stores. What's legal? What's not? What's safe and what's sketchy? Joining us for today's roundtable discussion is Greg Edwards. He's a supervisor with the Department of Health, Food and Drug Branch. And May Fui Mauno Po is a family nurse practitioner at Malie Cannabis Clinic here in Honolulu. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Greg, can you set the stage for us? Because we began to see all this CBD marketing explosion following the passage of the Farm Bill, right?
Yeah, we noticed it. We started getting a lot more inquiries about legitimizing, asking manufacturers coming to us asking how they can get a permit to sell. How can we do this? And that really started the conversation about, well, what are you selling? Are you selling a cosmetic? Are you selling a food? What kind of claims are you making? What ingredients are in there? And CBD was obviously the common ingredient. And at the same time, this is basically when FDA came out with their final decision that CBD products were not approved federally except for Epidiolex, which is the only CBD product that has gone through human clinical trials and been granted approval as a prescription drug only.
And what does that do?
It's for two pediatric seizures, epilepsy control. And as I understand, previously there was no other medical treatments that were proving successful. And so they were able to determine, the company GW Pharmaceutical was able to successfully do clinical trials, and parents were getting great success off of it.
So basically when the Farm Bill passed, it moved CBD kind of off the schedule.
Yes, as we understand it, the Farm Bill, first what I like to say is what the Farm Bill did and what it didn't do, which I think is really an important conversation, because you hear a lot of just Farm Bill. Farm Bill legalized it. The Farm Bill, legal in all 50 states. And what that message really is meant to say is that it's no longer a Schedule I drug under the Federal Controlled Substance Act, which is very important. You needed to do that in order for farmers to grow cannabis that would ultimately be hemp if it had low enough THC. That was critical. That was a vital first step. But the same bill that gave the farmers, the ability to grow this now under this new federal program also expressly preserved FDA's authorities to regulate food, drugs, and cosmetics. So it's very clear that this bill was not intended to give the farmers or the processors that are getting the extracts from these plants, these hemp plants, that they just could go right straight to market with their CBD products, their hemp extract products. They still had to follow the existing pathways that have existed for decades, for as any other ingredient used in the food supply, drug supply, cosmetics.
I mean, I know just as a consumer driving around, I've seen stores hang banners saying we have CBD products here. A coworker said, he saw something at a farmer's market, and I think I saw a vendor stand at one of the shopping malls, and I'm not really sure, what are they selling, I don't know, maybe what are you seeing at your clinic? People have questions about what is CBD and what's it best used for?
Yeah, so I think that we consistently get those questions, and I think that there's a lot of misinformation. CBD helps with a lot, but it's certainly not a cure-all. And definitely having a product that's from a reliable source that's been lab tested is the most important factor.
And I know folks are probably saying, if there's a problem with some of these things being sold out there, why isn't there a crackdown?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a very fair question. And the director was very clear at the beginning when we were researching this, and it was becoming very clear that this is everywhere. It's in so many different products used in ways that we're not used to seeing these ingredients, used in so many different ways. It's being sold in so many different places that it's not just in the health food store or just in the kiosk. We're seeing it in wireless phone stores. We're seeing it in there's a whole slew of places that we visited that just caught us by surprise that we wouldn't normally, that wouldn't be on our radar selling, you know, these kind of products. But the director made it very clear that we wanted to use education to start for both public and industry to let them know that these products are non-compliant with state law as well as federal law. And we first wanted to go out to them. So we visited about 110 establishments on Oahu. We had sent out letters to numerous trade organizations, mall management, farmers bureaus, to let them know the actual Q&A that we have on our website, to let them know that these products are non-compliant with state law and they're not to be sold. And we finished that in early August, and we're trying to see some of the, you know, we're hopeful that we would see, you know, less of it on the shelves, but that doesn't appear to be happening.
Okay, well, you know, we spoke with Dr. Clifton Otto. He's with the Cannabis Healthcare Hawaii Group. He's an advocate for protecting the state-accepted medical use of cannabis, and he's been working with the Hawaii State Legislature since 2012 in an effort to advance changes in Hawaii's medical use of cannabis program. He expressed some of his concerns with the widespread use of CBD in everyday products. Here's what he had to say.
The Department of Health has come out with their guidance on the subject, basically saying the only legal source of CBD is from our dispensaries, and yet we're not seeing really any enforcement of that policy. So that's causing a lot of confusion for customers and patients. I think it's very clever marketing, and because of these hemp programs that have sprouted up in different states, people are claiming, they've been claiming this from the beginning, that CBD is legal in all 50 states, and there are a lot of anecdotal reports and people telling their friends that they had some benefit from it. And so, yeah, it's really surprising how willing people are to accept this without knowing anything about really where it's coming from. Was the hemp cultivator licensed by the state? Was the land tested where the hemp was grown? So we need to know where it's being grown. Also, there are reports of unregulated laboratories in China that are mass producing CBD in the labs without any regulation. It's being shipped into this country and possibly ending up in these ABC store gummy bears. Customers in general need to be asking these questions. Where is this coming from? Can we see proof of proper licensing? Can we see proof of third-party testing? All these different pieces. And ultimately, we really need the Department of Health to start putting resources into enforcing its policy.
So, Greg, when will we see the enforcement?
The director has definitely started to pivot towards stronger enforcement. We've been discussing that. He mentioned that at an informational briefing, I think it's September 12th, that we'll be looking at more closely at some of these products to get them off the shelves.
And when you say director, we're talking about Bruce Anderson, the director of the Health Department.
Yes.
And it's a position he's held a couple of times. so he's
correct.
Familiar with, you know, some of the things that come up. And sometimes government regulation tends to fall behind when something blows up on the marketplace like this.
Yeah, I mean, the regulations, and one thing I think, you know, take this opportunity to state is that, you know, these regulations, they're not new. These aren't new. These have been around for decades. The pathways that exist to bring a drug to market, the pathways exist to bring a food to market, a food added as food ingredients, pathways to bring a cosmetic to market, they're all different, but they all exist. And they don't, the CBD products out on the market, except for Epidiolex, FDA approved, and the products from our medical cannabis dispensary, which is, you know, carved out from that, they're non-compliant. So we, as I mentioned before, we wanted to start with education because this is unprecedented, the amount of product that's come in that's just overwhelmed the United States, not just Hawaii. This is, you know, all 50 states are dealing with this. It's in so many places that we wanted to start with education. You know, the other thing I like to add is you don't have to register with the Food and Drug Branch to sell this product or sell any, like health foods don't have to register. Health food stores don't have to register with us. So we don't know where these products are. Our program was never designed to be a police force, an army of inspectors to police the shelves and instantly remove product. And as a kind of a testament to that, it kind of shows that all these years it's been working. You don't see industry doesn't push out unapproved products like they've done with CBD. You don't see it. It's truly unprecedented in all my years, which shows you that our laws do actually work, but it's completely contingent upon people following them. And by and large, people do follow them.
And so we are waiting for additional rules to come down from the federal government. Nobody's sure when. Sometime before the end of the year, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we are hearing that they are looking at this intently. There's some great information. I encourage your listeners that are curious about this topic more to go to FDA.gov, search CBD. They have dedicated website there with their FAQ, as well as link to additional documents that they have recently put out that explains very clearly the challenges ahead of them and recognizing the clear value of CBD. I mean, clearly there's value in it. They've approved CBD and Epidiolex. What I think we're the billion-dollar question that industry has and everyone has is, if FDA allows CBD to be used in the marketplace, how will they do it? Will it be as in dietary supplement requirements? Will it be under food additive, allowed to be put into foods? What requirements will be given? Will there be potency limitations? You know, only X number of milligrams can be per dose. What standard will be used? Are these going to be good manufacturing practices for dietary supplements or foods? There's different standards. And these are all incredibly important decisions the FDA has to make. And they have to make this off science. They have to make this off sound science. And it takes time to do that. So I don't see them waving the magic wand, coming out with rules tomorrow that's going to grandfather in all of this product that's been made under who knows what kind of conditions. I don't see them taking that risk. That's my opinion.
Right. And so we're talking really quality control about the stuff that's out there. What are you seeing? What are you hearing from the people in the clinics?
So I have several patients who use cannabidiol. Cannabidiol is really a great adjunct for people who want to use THC. So an additive to therapy, it really helps to block a lot of the unwanted side effects from THC. At the end of the day, cannabidiol itself is a very safe product. However, we really have to look at where it's coming from. It needs to be lab tested for heavy metals, for fungicides, for molds. And I think, you know, with the recent, you know, issues that we've seen with vaping, that was all from illicit markets. So is this action that, you know, going to turn CBD into an illicit market now? You know, so it's like, where is the balance? You know, because I can't imagine CBD, you know, like how it is now. I can't imagine in a year it being on the black market. Like, I just think that would be progressing backwards instead of forward.
And you had mentioned that, you know, folks can get it over the internet, right?
Easily
available.
So even if it's taken off of our shelves here locally in Hawaii, you know, there's no way to stop the flood of it coming in through the internet because, you know, people can buy it pretty much anywhere. So when we're looking at safety in brands, Center for Food Safety just put out a really great report where they reviewed several products, and their list it is filled with products that have, you know, no pesticides, no heavy metals, and are tested for potency. So I think that's a really good place for people to start.
Yeah, just to drive people, folks out there to good resources, I guess,
yes,
at the end of the day. Well, this is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. Our guests in our studio are Mei Fuimaunapoa, a family nurse practitioner at the Malia Cannabis Clinic, and Greg Edwards. He's a supervisor with the Department of Health and Food Drug Branch. We'd like you to call in and join the discussion by calling 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. We do have a call on the line. Daniel from Oahu. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey. Good morning and aloha.
What's your question?
So I guess listening to you guys, obviously my question just changed a little bit, but there's obviously with regulation, there needs to be that with opioids being a huge crisis. But my question is this, being a patient, why don't we have doses on the actual flower when using it? I feel like when you buy it, they just kind of say, here you go. When is that going to be a factor in the next future? The near future.
So when you purchase flower from our dispensary, it doesn't have dosages, but it has the percentage of THC and cannabinoids. So you can see if it has, 20% THC, 8% THC, and then you can also see the percentage of CBD. And a lot of our dispensaries across the state also test for terpene levels, so you can get the full entourage effect as well.
And Daniel, you had a second question?
Yeah, the second question is, I guess the only one that I have is the benefits of using either CBD for anxiety. What benefits do they have compared to having a doctor prescribe a medicine to you?
We often treat patients who have anxiety issues, and with any type of alternative or complementary medicine, I never recommend stopping it in place of CBD. Typically, the dosing that we see from the random control trials for cannabidiol or CBD and anxiety are really high, around 600 milligrams daily, which is really unaffordable for a lot of people. So I tend to recommend to use whatever anxiety medication that you're currently on and add a safe brand.
And what are the different ways administering CBD, pill form?
So there's five kind of main methods for administration of most cannabinoid therapies. So inhaled methods is what everybody thinks about. And cannabidiol comes in a flower form, so it looks really similar to just regular THC bud or flower. So inhaled. There's sublingual products, which are, CO2-based, CO2 extracted in an alcohol base, and those have a more rapid onset. There's cannabidiol in oils. So it's kind of extracted like a tea, kind of brewed, and you use that orally. And then there's topical, which I think is a really great application for cannabidiol. It works really well with rashes and inflammation. And then the last one is transdermal, which is like patches.
And Greg, one thing that I've never really been able to wrap my head around, is when you have something, let's say like a THC or, a drug, how is it that when it comes to cannabis that people just say, okay, we can just grow a plant and smoke it, explain that to me. I don't really understand why other drugs are maybe have far more controls around the usage.
Well, I think if I understand your question correctly, a little bit to what May was talking about, there's different ways to introduce the drug to your body, injection, eye drops, ear drops, of course, oral consumption, inhalation, asthma medications are inhaled. So it's a legitimate way to introduce a substance to your body, and certainly there is effects, as May just, attested to. As to, why CBD needs to be, or, is proposed to be used that way as flower, being sold, I couldn't really tell you. I think it's just like any other CBD product. There's CBD in there. The person feels that there's benefit from inhaling it as opposed to consuming it. I've heard that, maybe you feel the effect sooner. So maybe it's a they want to feel the effect sooner. Maybe it's a calming effect.
Anything else you want to add to that, May?
So I think it depends also on the symptoms that people are wanting to treat that they would use a different method, right? Because if you have a migraine, then you might want to use an inhaled method because you're going to get the effects immediately.
Okay. You know, we did talk to Representative Cynthia Thielen this morning. She, I believe, was part of that legislative discussion that we had earlier this month at the state capitol. She had some concerns about the laws in Hawaii and whether or not CBD was okay to use in things like cosmetics. Here's what she had to say.
There is absolutely no restriction on CBD in cosmetics. It's legal federally, legal across the nation, and the Department of Health's director has notified all of the hemp farmers, the few that have been able to get a permit, that they are not allowed to sell that product. Well, that's just false. And you go look in the stores and you go look in the cosmetic sections, you will find CBD in myriads of products. It's legal. If CBD is produced from hemp, hemp is not a controlled substance anymore. It is not a drug. It's an agricultural crop. And provided that you're not claiming any miraculous health benefits or whatever from the CBD in your cosmetics, then you're absolutely fine to be able to have that placed into the cosmetics and to sell them in the local marketplace.
So that's her reading of the law, which I'm sure, Greg, that you know you disagree with.
Well, no, we appreciate the question. It is a very good question. We've had concerns about this ourselves when we were first coming out with our question and answer. But, you know, the short answer is a cosmetic is only a cosmetic if it doesn't contain a drug. So the real question is CBD a drug? Well, we know the answer to that. Yes, it's an Epidiolex. It's an active pharmaceutical ingredient approved by FDA. Regardless of the source, and that's really important, it's not CBD from cannabis that's approved, it's CBD, cannabidiol. Now, that brings up another point. This is a naturally occurring compound. It's available in other non-cannabis sources. We've heard reports that it's coming from orange peels, that you can extract tiny amounts of it, or, you know, through catalysts and other extraction methods, you can get a significant quantity with enough orange peels and make a CBD product that is non-cannabis derived. This still falls under FDA's authority as well as ours. So while we understand some of the confusion there that CBD is not on a list of prohibitive ingredients allowed in a cosmetic, neither is any other prescription drug on the list of prohibitive ingredients. So I don't think anyone would advocate that you put hydrocortisone, Adderall, any other prescription medication just in a cosmetic and still not have to follow any of the drug laws, any of the drug labeling laws, any of the standards. It's no longer cosmetic.
So it's that unusual situation where all of a sudden it's like, yeah, let's put it in everything that walks through the door.
Precisely.
Okay. Anything else that you think would be worth noting? You know, when you have customers come in or, you know, patients come into your clinic, about what the problem seems to be out there, the perception of this?
So I think, you know, one of, I think there's several products, several problems, you know, and I think it's kind of with the issues with it existing in the gray area. I think when anything is kind of in a gray area, when it's on the shelves and, you know, there's no accountability from producers, I think it makes it really, really, really difficult for patients. So we definitely, you know, recommend brands that have been vetted, that have been lab tested, as well as going to our dispensaries. And at the end of the day, a lot of our patients grow their own cannabidiol-rich cannabis strains. Because that's one of the other, right? So it's my understanding the two legal ways for patients to consume CBD in the state of Hawaii is if they've grown it, and if it's from the dispensaries.
Well, yeah, I mean, if it's part of the medical cannabis program,
correct.
Whatever the requirements are, then, again, I don't work with the medical cannabis program, but yes, if it's obtained through that regulatory framework that Hawaii's put in place, then yes. The other legal way is federally through FDA-approved Epidiolex.
So there are, Epidiolex,
you know, this is not an indictment that CBD is legitimate CBD is not good, is harmful, but it's also not risk-free. And there are legitimate sources that you can, you know, get this product in Hawaii. We're not taking it away from the people. It is available.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, this is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. We are tackling the ABCs of CBD. You can join the discussion by calling 1-877-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a short break.
Hi, this is Jose Fajardo, President and General Manager of Hawaii Public Radio. Pack your bags because your next mainland trip may be on us. Our fall fun drive kicks off tomorrow with an exciting giveaway. 2 round-trip coach tickets anywhere Alaska Airlines flies. Tune in and pledge tomorrow, September 25th, and mahalo for your support.
Shy caller from Waimanalo comments, you're having a circular discussion because it's a Schedule 1 narcotic along with fentanyl and opioids. All the pathways for a product to come on the market are restricted. Any thoughts about that?
Well, federally, you know, DEA, Drug Enforcement Agency, you know, enforces the Controlled Substance Act. So the intent is clear through the Farm Bill to deschedule hemp and hemp derivatives. So, again, that's a good thing. We talked about that earlier. So we know what the clear intent of Congress was to give the authority to federally to the Department of Agriculture to create a program to allow farmers in America to grow cannabis, and it'll become hemp upon testing low THC, you know, 0.3%, and it's no longer would be Schedule 1. So I think, you know, I think we're comfortable in saying that it's what the intent federally is to deschedule hemp, low THC. However, at the state level, the Department of Health does not do the scheduling, schedule drug products. That's Narcotic Enforcement Division.
And the pilot project, I know, to grow hemp is being handled, I think, by the Department of Agriculture. There
Correct.
Were a number of permits that were doled out to a number of people on different islands. One company that we talked to said that, you know, they had the test plants out, but they had very high levels of THC, and so they had to destroy them. So they're still kind of going through the testing phase to try and figure out what hemp crops are going to work.
Yeah, interestingly, in discussions with the program manager for the hemp pilot program, you know, very few successful crops have tested as hemp. It's not hemp until it tests out at 0.3% or below. It's marijuana until it tests otherwise. So it's very interesting that, you know, currently it's been kind of difficult to grow a legal hemp in Hawaii under a license. But there have been more successful crops that have tested as hemp.
And the shy caller from Waimanalo also is asking that the experts discuss the difference between a whole plant and isolates. Mm. Who wants to take that?
From a medical standpoint or from a manufacturing standpoint, isolates, as I understand it, are the concentrated cannabinoid, whether it's CBD or any other cannabinoid. In other words, this would be like any other concentration coming, any other extraction that you pull out of a product. If you continue to concentrate it, the concentration will increase. And this actually, interestingly, this happens with THC. In other words, the THC content, 0.3% at harvest for the plant, okay, great, it's hemp. Now, when you start extracting it versus the dry product, the product that may be just flour, it's still going to be 0.3 because it's flour. No more processing. when it starts to become extracted through either organic compounds are used, like butane, or CO2 extraction processes are used, the concentrations start to go up. So you can actually have, in this intermediary processing step, you can have the THC content go up considerably higher than 0.3%. And there are concerns about, is the manufacturer now diluting this back down? You hear the expression, the solution is dilution. So in other words, if it creeps up too high, are you bringing it back down through diluting it again? And this is one of the questions that law enforcement has with respect to THC contents being concentrated through extraction after they come out of legal hemp.
Now, I also know that there are a lot of folks, a lot of pet owners that are looking at CBD, and they're giving them to their animals because they think, you know, and they're anecdotal stories. Yes, it's helping my dog. It's helping Fido. It's helping Fluffy. Any thoughts about that?
Well, you know, pets are mammals. All mammals have an endocannabinoid system. So because we have an endocannabinoid system that interacts with all of our other body systems, I imagine that phytocannabinoids or the cannabis plant would have similar reactions in animals. But I don't work with animals. I work with humans. So I really wouldn't know, like, what dosing strategies. They would have to really check with their veterinarian and somebody who has a lot of knowledge in that realm. I don't know if you, Greg.
No, we haven't, you know, we haven't heard one way or another. Most of the recommendations are, you know, if you're going to use this, you know, and your pet's experiencing possibly some problems, to call the, you know, pet poison line, and or call a vet, of course. And it's new, and that's just the reality. It's new. Yeah. So we just don't have enough information to know how, at what dose is going to be effective. For instance, in Epidiolex, now this is only approved in humans, it's based on weight of the child. So the dosing is based on a weight. It's not just take one dropper full. It's a liquid. It's based on the weight. And that's important. That tells you right there that you have to be careful with how you're administering this in terms of the amount that you're given, because too much of it can actually cause seizures, and that's exactly what it's trying to prevent. There's drug-drug interactions, you know, so there is liver toxicity possibility to CBD. And these are all born out of legitimate human clinical trials that GW Pharmaceutical did for Epidiolex. So these are known consequences of having too much CBD, and that, it, you know, you do need to be, you know, aware, which is why it's under, you know, prescription only under the care of a doctor.
So it goes back to the whole thing of quality control. Where are you getting it from, and the dosage?
Dosage is a big part. You know, we talk a lot about testing. I mean, testing is a finished product, and that's a start, and that's good, but that speaks nothing of the conditions by which it was made. So current good manufacturing practices are foundational principle in food safety, drug safety, cosmetic safety, and there's no standards that are being applied. So we can't test our way out of this problem. We can get some assurances to some extent that the product before you has been tested and there's no lead, there's no pesticides, there's no, you know, microbials. That's good, but that doesn't speak to whether it was made in a garage or whether it was made in a high-quality facility. It's still unapproved product.
And what are we seeing in other states, do you know? I mean, in other clinics, what's the experience?
So I think if we look at, you know, some of the more mature cannabis markets and some of the ones with like adult use, and right now, arguably, Colorado probably has one of the best, you know, the biggest and best producers of cannabidiol. And what we see is through pressure from consumers is really high levels of self-regulation. You know, consumers and patients, they want high quality products. So they've really been demanding, you know, the lab testing, the certificate of analysis, the third party lab testing. So, you know, the biggest brands on our market, you know, have that in place through really consumer demand and self-regulation. And when it comes to cannabis, I would argue that it's not new. that it's been around for millenniums, that people have been using cannabis for thousands of years. Only through prohibition in the last 80 years has it become like this. Eli Lilly and every pharmaceutical company had some form of cannabis medicine on the market.
We have a call coming in from the North Shore. Gavin, what's on your mind?
Hi, hello. This is Gavin from the North Shore. I just want to let you guys know the CBD oil has helped out so extremely with my neck injury, along with my knee injury as a pro surfer, and it's been super, you know, it's instrumental when it comes to this stuff. It's something we need on the islands. It's something that needs to be, I don't know, I believe it should be very much, I don't know, if you call it legalized, whatever, but it has helped me in so many ways when it comes to injury, you know, recovery.
Do you use it as a topical?
I've been using it as a topical, but on top of that, I have a lot of friends who have, you know, multiple sclerosis and, you know, some Down syndrome issues. And one of my good friends, he said his daughter had multiple, you know, epileptic attacks during out the day. And after they used CBD oils, it very much knocked those seizures down to, you know, one-tenth of what they are dealing with in a daily basis.
Well, thank you for sharing that. May, you know, what have you seen in your clinic?
So, you know, what Gavin shared is really what I see every day. I always joke that when patients come back from my renewal, typically I'm taking them off of medications instead of adding. You know, CBD and THC, cannabis medicine in general, has made huge improvements, especially when it comes to chronic pain. You know, and cannabidiol is a very, very effective anti-inflammatory. You know, there's a ton of research about it. You know, that's the other thing is, you know, we talk about cannabis and research. You know, there's been over 10,000 primary sourced cannabis research studies worldwide, and in the United States, it's one of the most researched basically molecules on the planet at this point. We have the studies, we know what it does, we know how it works, and we know why it works.
And how do we stack up as a state compared to other places on the mainland in dealing with this?
It's a really good question, and it's difficult to answer because different states handle, different departments in the states, or it's handled differently. I'll give you an example. In California, at the state level, they regulate it through the manufacturing process. So the state regulators can go out there, and it's not allowed in California. According to, I spoke with their regulators there at the state level for manufacturing to put it in food products, et cetera. However, at the county level, and there's dozens and dozens of counties in California, they have the authority to what's on the shelf to take action to either remove product or not. So again, this kind of is difficult to say, well, I can get it. I can get it in this county over here. And it's like, well, geez, I can't get it over here because the counties have that authority. Other states, it's regulated as a Scheduled One still. I've seen some pharmacy, boards of pharmacy, just take the lead. It's a Scheduled One drug, can't be on the market. Other Department of Ags regulate it a little differently.
And how does that work? Because I know with the medical marijuana, you're not allowed to go inter-island. So is it the same thing with CBD? May, do you know?
For TSA, I think that you can fly with it, with CBD, yeah.
Yeah, this part is, you know, there was reports of, you know, some people being stopped in one state in particular, I think it was Texas, that was, they had CBD on them, and they stopped them because it's a Scheduled One. They've since, what I read is they've since modified that. And I think in large part of the intent of the Farm Bill, we know what Congress' intent was, deschedule hemp and hemp derivatives. So if the person is carrying a CBD, you know, product on them, we know what the intent is. It's to not treat it as a Scheduled One drug, not to treat it as if you're carrying illicit marijuana or any other, you know, illicit drug. So, you know, we think that's a good thing. We're not looking for people to, you know, go to jail. This is not a possession issue with respect to the Department of Health's decision making on this. It's the, you know, the sale of it, the manufacture and sale of it, that hasn't gone through the established pathways.
Okay, and so how does this work then as we start to, we've done the education, you've notified, you know, the various vendors across the state. How does the enforcement work out? You know, are there fines associated with that? Higher fines if there are scoff laws?
Yeah, there's our statute has enforcement, you know, penalties associated with it. How it would normally work is we would be giving an order to cease and desist. So that's, you know, you need to take it off the shelf. If you don't comply with that, we have the power to embargo. Embargo is not seizure. Embargo is you still own the product, but it's on a pause. We stand there, you have to remove it from the shelf, you put it in a box, tape it up. We count the number of products that we're embargoing. We put a big sticker on there that says, if we come back and it's no longer here, if it's even moved from the location that you agree for it to stay in the facility, it's $10,000 per item. So if it's a vial and there's 24 vials in a box, you can do the math. So it's pretty significant potential penalties when you get to an embargo. So we started with education. And if we move to enforcement, which the director is looking at, we don't want to get to embargo. We want you to remove the product. And I think that leads into another part that we haven't really discussed. That's the responsibility not only of government, but also of retailers. You know, they know they're not supposed to be selling this product. So why are they still selling it? It's a fair question.
Right. And so do you know the timetable for enforcement? Are we going to wait to see what the federal rules say and then try and, you know, make it clean going forward?
Well, the director's been very, you know, clear that, you know, guidance from FDA will certainly be, you know, looked at and is welcome. But I think, you know, he needs to act on his own timeline, and he'll make that decision if he's going to continue to wait for FDA's guidance. But my feeling is I don't think FDA's guidance is going to say something to the effect of all existing CBD is legal and just allowed to be sold. So I really think we're still left in this situation, which is what do we do with the product that's on the market now? We know going forward there's mechanisms that FDA is looking at to allow it, but that's going to take regulations, and it's going to take science to give FDA the guidance that they need to make effective regulations on how it's going to be, you know, dished out, so to speak, under what platform.
Well, this is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. We've got about 10 minutes left. You can join the discussion by calling 1-877-941-3689. Again, also if you're calling from the neighbor islands, 1-877-941-3689, 941-3689 here on Oahu. What about this whole issue of food additives? You know, at the farmer's market, where somebody's adding whatever oil or whatever into baked goods, are you seeing a lot of that? I mean, because you were an inspector out in the field before you became the supervisor of this division, right?
So yeah, correct. Now this is handled a little bit differently within the Department of Health because there's two different branches that look at food safety. Okay, sanitation branch is also within the Department of Health, and they handle farmers markets and, of course, restaurants, retail food establishments, basically any place that requires a permit to, you know, sell food. So think of the green placards that, you know, you hear a lot about. So sanitation branch has that authority to regulate them, and they're the primary agency. It's not allowed. And our first initial press release said that very clearly back on May 1st. The program managers made it very clear that any permitted facility that is adding CBD to their products is a violation, and their permit can be taken against their permit.
And are you hearing that patients out there are consuming it this way, getting it at farmers markets?
not typically. You know, there's several. You know, most of my patients are still getting it from, you know, nationwide reputable organizations, you know, like Charlotte's Web or, you know, some of the other big CBD brands. To be honest, a majority of our patients get it online because it's just simple. So is there a plan to, what's the plan for online sales?
You know, our law only extends to the borders.
Okay.
So, you know, obviously the manufacture, distribution, and or sale of it within the state of Hawaii comes under our statute and our authority. Again, this is not a possession issue.
Right.
You possess it. The Department of Health is not coming after you for possessing it. It's, you can't sell it, you can't manufacture it, you can't distribute it.
Okay.
So then as far as good information, where can we drive our listeners again to getting factual information and good quality CBD?
So for me, I think getting really good information about CBD has always been Project CBD. They're a national organization. They collect all of the latest journal articles and package it in a way that is understandable for consumers. And once you kind of get the education, then as far as brands go, I really like the Center for Food Safety and the brands that have been vetted on their website for, organic standards, no pesticides, clean extraction, also using sustainable regenerative farming.
And then, Greg, do you have any information about anything that the health department is going to be doing, just either as an added outreach to folks?
I mean, we're going, if the director, as I mentioned, is considering stronger enforcement. And if that decision is made, then we will be sending out letters again, and we'll be conducting, spot checks. And if the product's there, then we will, follow whatever policy we put in place with respect to enforcement, be it verbal cease and desist orders to start, or whether it be a written cease and desist order. And then if there's noncompliance, then we can escalate that. But this is still a decision that's currently being weighed out.
And what was your takeaway from the legislative informational hearing that we had this month?
I thought it was good. I mean, I think that they're acknowledging that we have a medical cannabis program, legal, medical cannabis, and that we also have this CBD, hemp products that have been started to be legalized through descheduling, but they haven't been fully legalized with respect to marketing, which is under FDA's authority. So there's a little bit of out of sync there at the federal level. So FDA is doing their part, and it's going to take some time for them to put the regulations in effect. So the state is basically left with the situation of, do we want to get ahead of FDA and allow it to be essentially OTC, something available to everyone? And if so, just like FDA, it's the same questions, under what standards? And I think, to me, that's what this informational briefing was. This information can be used to decide whether the state wants to go down that road.
Okay, we have about, 2-3 minutes left. Any final wrap-up thoughts? Anything you want to underscore? Just as far as quality and education?
A little bit to the quality point, but this is more, this is that regulatory, world that I live in. Sometimes you hear from a manufacturer that this is made in an FDA certified, GMP certified, facility. And they use that as a means to say that, therefore, it's approved. And don't be confused. That's not correct. It's completely incorrect. Following GMP standards is great. So if the company is following a current GMP standard, what I mean by that is, say it's a dietary supplement standard where they've established quality assurances, quality controls in the houses, they're testing the raw materials, they're establishing a process for production controls, they have written standard operating procedures. These are all requirements that make up good manufacturing practices. They could be following all of that, and that's good. However, the ingredient that they're using is still an unapproved ingredient. So what you end up with is high quality unapproved ingredient. So it's a high quality unapproved product. So though that's good, it doesn't mean that the product has been approved. Doesn't mean that the government has signed off that anyone is looking at this. It's something that I think those manufacturers are ahead of the game, because I think when regulations come out, they're probably going to be much closer to what FDA is going to require them to be than someone that's mixing it up.
Right, so don't get snowed by some snazzy marketing campaign, I guess. So it'll be a little more a critical consumer, I guess, right, Meg?
Yeah, absolutely. And, there's a great source as our dispensary, as well as, if you are a medical cannabis patient in the state of Hawaii, you can absolutely grow your own.
Okay. All right. Well, we would like to thank our guests, Greg Edwards, He's a supervisor with the Department of Health, Food, and Drug Branch. And Mei Fui Maunopo, she's a nurse practitioner at the Mylie Cannabis Clinic. And if you've been out there listening, we'd like to thank you for joining us on today's show. If you still have some questions or comments, you can still contact the talkback line and leave your comments. That number, 808-792-8217. You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation Podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of the conversation.